Part 1. Mischief. From Ovid, Metamorphoses. Chapter 1, lines 129 through 134. Of iron is the last, in no part good and tractable as former ages past. For when that of this wicked age once opened was the vein, therein all mischief rushed forth. Then faith and truth were fain, and honest shame to hide their heads, for whom stepped stoutly in craft, treason, violence, envy, pride, and wicked lust to win. Chapter 1. Darrow. Till the Veil. I stand amidst the blind. Cloudy eyes set in sun-ravaged faces stare up at the sun, at the stone obelisks, at the meager cubes of protein cupped in their blistered hands, at their leader who brought them to this cursed place, and see nothing but darkness. Their retinas have been fried by the ordinance of our enemies. They reach to touch my red cloak as if it will heal them. They are reds, greys, browns, coppers, and the few obsidians who chose not to heed their queen's call to return to Earth. The legionnaires survived the Fear Knight's ambush in the Western Ladon, only to become 2,301 casualties that we must continue to feed, supply with medical aid, and protect. Why would Atlas, our Ra, kill when maiming pays dividends? My men look on the living casualties with despair. Others turn their heads away, as if looking at them might invite the same fate upon themselves. Drop by drop, he blackens the pigment of our souls. I bend in front of a grey with two cauterized stumps for legs. You look like you got between a telemannus and a pint of whiskey, legionnaire.
Fear so, sir. I'd be back in the fight had we the gear.
If he were a gold or obsidian, he'd be back in the fight by month's end. But we can't spend our near-extinguished supply of prosthetics on regular infantry. Bad investment. I once thought the greatest sin of war was violence. It isn't. The greatest sin is it requires good men to become practical.
I still see it, sir, like a ghost trail.
The grey rubs his eyes, remembering the Fear Knight's firebrand.
Bright as day. Can't sleep a wink.
You and me both. But next time you open your eyes, it'll be Mars, you see. You're from Hippolyte, yes?
Born and bred in the Jade City, sir.
Then we'll share oysters and cigars there soon. I promise. I pat him on the shoulder, murmur something inconsequential, and move on. I stop before an old red man with a thin quilt about his shoulders despite the heat. Bald, but for a crescent of thin grey hair, he rolls a burner with practiced ease. His eyes flick back and forth as he realizes I am there. He takes in a sharp breath.
Is it you?
He holds out a hand. I take it in mine. His burner begins to shake from nerves. I set my hand on his and motion a woman to toss me her ring lighter. The end of the burner curls with smoke as I give the old red a light and toss the lighter back.
Looks like you've had a day, I say.
He takes a deep drag. His hand steadies.
I'm red, sir. Been blind most of me life. I'll get on fine-like. If there's other mouths need feeding, don't worry about me. I don't die.
His accent.
What mine are you from, legionnaire?
He grins.
Yours, as it happens.
Lycos.
I search his face. The crow's feet around his eyes are peppered with blood fly bites.
What's your name? Don't you recognize me, sir?
He takes another drag from his burner. It glows, burning hot and fast. His hand holds it the same way it did the day Io died, between his ring and pinky fingers. I feel the movement of the deep mine winds, the smell of rust and swill, an echo of Eo's laughter. It's been a long time.
Dago, I whisper. Dago of Gamma.
Could it really be the Helldiver I worshipped and loathed as a child? The man who taught me the meaning of defeat, who won 32 laurels. Now here, on Mercury, in my army. 15 years later. For him, it looks like it's been 40. His age makes me feel the years.
In the bloody damn flesh, sir.
He shivers from his wound, but manages that slash of a smile. Few teeth remain.
How long have you been?
Since Mars, sir.
5 years.
And you never thought to find me.
Man ain't shit if he slags with a Helldiver that's got his eye on the laurel.
His laugh becomes a cough.
But you got it now, sir. Damn well you do.
Sir. Felix, a pristine gold of my bodyguard, appears behind me. Hailing from a minor house pledged to House Augustus, he is a dour cynic of a man. Just past 40, he has little love of the low colours. But he is loyal to my wife, and he is Martian. These days, there is no more trustworthier breed. 2 dozen more gold bodyguards tower clean and strong as gods at the edge of the Sea of the Blind, the zenith and dregs of humanity. I feel guilt that I chose the zenith instead of my own people for protection. Practicality again.
Your shuttle is ready to depart. Your fellow traveller is growing restless.
I want to stay. Ask 1,000 things of Dago, but I can't. I barely have time to visit the men as it is. Time was, you could walk among the wounded and find Severo sprawled in drink with them, playing Karachi, poorly. His absence is felt everywhere, not just in the field. So many gaps for me to fill.
Reaper!
Dago motions to me. I crouch back down. He pulls open his thigh pack. 2 canisters sit inside, one filled with Martian soil, the other empty for his own ash. Most Martian soldiers fear dying on an alien sphere. How many corpses have I seen shriveled after bombardments, their hands clutched around home soil? How many cans of ash have I sent back to Mars to be spread in the sea? Dago offers me his home soil. It even smells of Mars, that faint hint of iron.
I can't take that, I say.
Where's your can then, eh?
Left it on Luna. This vacation was unexpected. He takes a handful of the soil and reaches out to me.
It's from Lycos.
He coughs blood into his quilt.
Yours as much as mine. Bring it back, and we'll share a dram and some gob, eh?
He reaches for my hand and flattens it so he can give me half of his dust.
Mars is with you, till the veil.
Others hear his words and begin to thump their chests over their hearts in the fading dirge, except it is an inversion. Not the fast beating to a slow stop as in death, but a slow pace, quickening to a racing beat. I'm about to say something to Dago, when he lights another burner and blows the smoke in my face like old times.
No time for words, sir. You got killing to do.
I clench my fist around the dirt. Till the veil. With Lycos soil in a secure pouch, I depart the desert, spoiling for a fight. My shuttle bears north over the desert chalk. Behind, Heliopolis trembles in the warped horizon. A great shield wall, 1 kilometer high and 15 long, blocks the mouth of the 2 converging mountain ranges. House Votum crafted the wall to shield Heliopolis from the desert storms that come when spring cyclones descend from the Sycorax Sea in the far north to tear south through the waste of Ledon down onto Heliopolis. Sparks shiver along the wall's crest as engineers weld guns from broken ships into place. I lament the waste of firepower. The guns are only there to satisfy the demands of Heliopolis's inhabitants and the master maker Glerastes, not to counter an invasion. Heliopolis is the second wealthiest city of Mercury, rich with architecture, famous for its chariot races, and the gateway to the coastal mines. But it is strategically insignificant for my aims. To the north is where I will break the enemy. Heliopolis is a thorn in my boot, a hotbed of loyalist insurrection, plots, and back-alley murders. Behind its wall, the haughty city of Limestone slouches south toward the Bay of Sirens, and then the Caliban Sea. Refugees and soldiers boil through the dusty streets and stuff the city with a ripe summer stink. But there is another scent there in that desert city. Not gull shit, or fish markets, or the exhaust of war machines, but something else. Something creeping that clings to the root of the brain. Fear. Fear in the eyes of my legions as they look up to orbit, where Atalantia fine-tunes her invasion plans, or to the shadowed mountains, where the Fear Knight and his guerrillas sharpen their impaling stakes, or to the streets filled with Mercurians, any of whom could be a spy or an assassin. If the death of the fleet was an amputation, this siege is death by exsanguination. Bit by bit, frontline exposure to the perversions of the Fear Knight's guerrillas and waiting for the rain deteriorates their psyches. My loyal Martians patrol deserts and mountains and erect war machines and battleworks, waiting to be shot by snipers or hear the bug scream, that dread keening which signals a spider mine's activation. Each a better fate than being captured by the Gorgons, the Fear Knight's veteran impalers of Zero Legion. Fear robs my men of their dignity, their nobility of purpose, their belief in our cause. Who can believe in the intangible with a garrote around their neck? They wait to die, slowly strangled by Atalantia and Atlas. Some hold out hope that the Republic will send a fleet. There is a small chance, but if I hunker down and wait for my wife to move the gears of democracy, there will be nothing left of us when the enemy strikes. We will die like flies, and fear will spread as the shadows of Atalantia's fleet creep across the steps of the new Forum and their titanium boots tread the shores of my home. So that makes it all very simple. I must kill it before it kills us. Our flight path takes us over the waste of Ladon, the sunbelt that chokes the center of Mercury's main continent, Helios. Half buried in its sands lie the remains of the three armies the waste has swallowed in its time. Soon I will feed it a fourth. Somewhere in the waste's axe-blade central mountains, my howlers heard the Fear Knight toward the tripwire of my trap, the mining city of Eleusis. Severo should have been leading them. Four commanders and two planets I've sent against Atlas. Four have been returned impaled, hole to hole. Only Severo and I can match the brutality of the Fear Knight. But I have too much weight to bear alone, so I have dispatched my best remaining small group commander, Thraxa, to lead, and my best sword, Alexander, in case it comes to blows. To the south, past Heliopolis, commandos install missile systems, mines, and anti-infantry microwave cannons on the tropic archipelagos and deep jungles that sprawl into the Caliban Sea. To the northeast, along the Petersos Peninsula, are the rising elevations and temperate climes of a tiara of heavily populated cities called the Children. The capital of the planet and headquarters for my army remains Tyche. We have made the treasured seaside home of the Votum into a fortress. Even as we pass over Crop Latifundia, far to its east, you can catch the glint of its spires, and the soothing sight of its guardian mountain, the morning star. Due to Orion's free-fall manoeuvre, the flagship of my fleet survived Atalantis' ambush. What the troops are calling the Battle of Caliban, for all the ships that fell through the atmosphere into the sea, and now keeps watch over Tyche as her systems undergo repairs, with hopes of one day returning her to the stars. Tyche is crucial, not just as a fallback citadel, but for the grav loop that runs south under the Hesperides Mountains, connecting Tyche to Heliopolis. Safe from bombardment, it will be the single artery for reinforcements if the fight reaches Tyche, and it will serve as our escape route to Heliopolis if Tyche falls. The only other path is across the waste of Ladon, and I'd rather have dinner with the Fear Knight than dare cross that devourer of armies. I busy myself with reports in the Necromancer's war room as the shuttle flies north. Beacons from submerged torch ships blink on the command display as we reach the northern extremity of the Sycorax Sea. Across the war room's data display, a silver aide drones on about shortages of anti-radiation meds in the south. Most are being hoarded in Tyche for the inevitable fallout. "Soon we'll have a surplus," I say. "Have you discovered a new supply, sir?" "No." His eyes flutter as he understands. I feel stuffy. My spirit aches to be released from this endless stream of supply logistics and construction delays. I need fresh air. I find Rona outside the entrance to the garage bay. Orion must be inside. My niece issues a crisp salute. Since her part in Orion's rescue, her popularity with the army has increased, especially with the blue and orange sailors and officers. So far, it hasn't gone to her head. Credit her father, Kieran, for that. "How's she looking?" I ask.
"Quiet, sir,"
Rona replies. "Eats alone, when she eats. Spends more time in the shower than the mess. Like she can't get clean. Avoids the men when she can. Night terrors make her dope up to sleep. Never dozes in quarters. New spot every night. Guard detail can barely keep tabs on her. Atlas did take her from her quarters," I say. "I wouldn't be able to use a bed either. Have you told anyone about your orders?"
"No, sir. I know you told Imperator Harnassus she passed her psych evaluation."
"Quiets the game."
"Good. Good. Has she spotted you?"
"Did you spot me yesterday when you were listening to Aunt V's hologram, instead of sleeping like the medic I ordered, sir?"
I frown. "Window? Topiaries?" I rub my eyes. "Shit. I'm getting old. Or I'm getting quieter." I suppose it was only a matter of time before everyone started catching up. I consider how young she looks, and how old I must be in her eyes. "Did you know I'm older than my father was when he died?
Still think of him as an old man."
I chuckle. "He'd be closer to your age, I reckon." She glances down the corridor and chews her lip.
"Permission to speak like we're blood, sir. Don't like me discussing mortality?"
She waits for my answer.
"Granted.
I didn't get you until we came back here. You were dead to us till I was near on 9. Everyone ran their gobs about you in Tinos. But I didn't get it. I didn't get that."
She points at the sling blade, asleep like a pale snake around my arm.
"You were just my uncle.
Then we came down with Orion, and I could see it. Every bloody soul was waiting to give Mercury their carbon. Then they saw you jump out this ship." The hairs on her forearms stand on end at the memory.
"You ain't old. You just need to let others haul their freight. Even the Reaper needs sleep, sir. Especially if he's gonna get us all home."
She still believes I can work miracles. But my exhaustion isn't made by these last days. A life of war is catching up with me. She doesn't know the weight I carry, how much I relied on Sevro to help carry it, how damaged our legions really are, how tactically sophisticated even the most basic grey infantry centurion of the enemy is compared with ours, not to mention their golds. We just don't have the same distribution of brain power or firepower.
Thank you for the concern, Lancer, but I'd caution you against spying on me again.
I move toward the door.
Sir.
I turn, growing annoyed. She stands at attention again.
When the rain falls, I request permission to ride with my cohort.
No, I need you at my side.
Because it's safer there?
She watches me with the same hard scrutiny my mother wields. Aside from Victra, Lycos women are the most stubborn breed.
You need your men to do their jobs. That's why you let Alexander tail you onto the Medusa. It's why you sent him off with Thraxa, to do his job. You can't protect us from this.
You're not Alexander.
Yet you put me in a star shell and sent me at the Medusa.
She leans forward. And now you feel guilt for that, for letting me come to Mercury at all. She hits the mark. She knows the promise I made her father.
Sir, at your side, I'm a 1.2-meter, 40-kilogram liability with quiet feet and a dirty gob. In a starshell, I'm decent. In a Drakenjäger, I'm a full metal god.
Blood flushes her cheeks. I know you're worried about my pa, but it was my choice to join you when Sevro bailed. My choice to be here. My choice to fight. Her voice hardens.
And if they get through us, it'll be iron over my pa's head, over Dio's head, my brothers and sisters' heads. So fuck your guilt and let me do my job.
I didn't have a choice but to use her to rescue Orion. I have a choice now. My pulse fist's recoil stabilizer is still touchy, I say.
See if you can calibrate it, Lancer.
I couldn't protect my son. So long as I have the power to protect my brother's daughter, I will. When the rain comes, she'll be sent to Heliopolis to wait out the storm. I leave Rona steaming mad to find Orion sitting alone in the back of the cargo hold. Always stout, now stick thin. The blue woman is darker than the gloom outside. Her bare feet dangle out the open door. Orion hears me enter and looks back. Her face is mottled with the res flesh that has replaced the chunks Atlas took out. New metal fingers extend from her knuckles.
Trouble? She asks.
Pushy relations. Without a smile, she turns back to watch the polar sky. Beyond the atmosphere of the planet, Atlantia's warships rove, waiting for us to just nip our heads outside the giant shield chains so they can drop mass drivers down and make craters of us.
Cold back here, I say over the whistling wind. Our ship passes over the edge of an ice shelf.
Why don't you head to mess? Colloway says it's bad to sink on an empty stomach.
I like the cold, she replies distantly, and my autonomy.
Fair enough. I settle in beside her to dangle my legs. I didn't lie to Harnassus and my high command. She did pass her first psych evaluation, but I have the suspicion Colloway helped her cheat. For 5 days after her rescue, she spoke only in brittle, pixelated sentences, preferring the company of her protege, Colloway, to any other. Then she asked to return to duty. I thought it would bring her back to herself. It hasn't. Her duties may be completed on schedule, but she remains the same as all who survived the Fear Night. Altered. I squint at mathematical notations written in the frost on the ship's hull.
Reminds me of home when they would turn off the heating,
Orion murmurs.
They like to find new reasons to do that. First calculus I learned was on hull frost.
fingers so numb I could barely hold the stylus.
Calculus? Poor lass. I only needed algebra, I say, trying to draw her out of her daze. I wish I could say it was solely for her benefit.
Do it in marker, on the side of the claw drill cockpit, with one hand.
I make a motion of digging with the other. Can't stop the drill, you see. Stop too long, and you're jammed.
You would need calculus to properly operate a claw drill apparatus, she replies. Yeah, well, Pa said the rest is all instinct. Disagree. Maybe you and I can have a duel back on Mars. There'll be new bunkers that need excavating.
She ignores the challenge and watches a herd of pale seahorses crossing an archipelago of ice. They shake their manes and angle their fins as their stunted legs launch them off the ice back into the water.
Fathers are important, she says. My kind think the notion perverse.
She goes to chew her fingernails, only to bite the metal of her prosthetics. She looks at the digits, as if seeing them for the first time.
Still, they call me mother, don't they?
That's the civil half of the name. She shrugs.
Children are disgusting. I would never have them. I cannot abide selfishness.
There is no way, gold or red, to understand the empathetic connection minds make in the synaptic drift. Orion's communication with her pilots in battle is nonverbal. Instead, it is formed of a web where the electric currents in her brain bond and interact with those of others. To have one side cut short is the cruelest of amputations. The ghosts of the dead linger in her synapses. I wonder if she thinks of the sailors she lost in the ambush, if she felt like a mother when she saw the Anihilo break the dream of Iho in half, if it is selfishness she cannot stand in children, or if it is the fear of losing them. The Senate recalled too many ships. Even if you saw Atalantia coming, she would have held the orbit. The Senate lost that battle, not you.
Her head snaps in my direction. Harnassus lost that battle when he didn't spit on the Senate's orders and sent half my fleet to Luna.
Your wife lost the battle when she did not override the Senate. She will not break the new compact.
And you think that a quality? Her precious morality for the price of my sailors?
Or is it fear of becoming her father?
She shakes her head. Harnassus and Virginia bear the guilt.
I feel none.
I do. Often. For the Sons of the Rim. For the dockyards of Ganymede.
Then you squander neurons.
Her hard shell has always existed, but not to this extreme.
It is easy to forget Orion's roots. From an unsanctioned birth, then childhood, in the dim frost of Phobos's hive city, destined to pilot garbage haulers and take a government stipend till death, to the commander of the most successful fleet since Selenius's Iron Armada. Amongst my own people, I had a home. Orion was never accepted by hers, until she climbed over their backs to the top and looked down to see them all pretending to have lifted her up. Of all the soldiers left in my army, I trust her the most, because she alone has never let me down. Any other astral commander, including me, would have lost the Morning Star, the surviving ships, and the army itself. Rail against my wife all you like. She's what keeps the Republic together, I reply. And Harnassus kept his army together when I wasn't here, and you were captured.
Harnassus, please. Oranges are pedantic apes with opposable thumbs used for two ventures. To spin wrenches and climb union ladders. He did what is in his nature. She runs a hand along her head, as if feeling for cracks in the skull.
And what is your nature?
The same as yours, to kill the enemy. As her eyes go distant, her voice softens. Can you think in space?
Depends on who you ask.
I can't think on the ground. Too much weight. Too many disgusting people and their refuse. She wipes her calculus off the hull. I know you think Atlas broke me.
If I thought you were broken, you'd be in sickbay.
I think you're dented. She likes that. He is an effective operator, to be certain. He presented me with a hideous desert rodent and said my pain would last only as long as the rat ate. It gnawed the flesh off my calves, nose, and cheeks before it split its stomach and died. It was effective. It horrified. It degraded. She looks over at me. Don't you see? I frown and shake my head. Together, you and I, we've broken worlds. Who can do what we have done? What our men have done? Yet we put ourselves at the mercy of rats. We free them, protect them, die for them, and when we turn our backs, they unveil their little teeth and gnaw at us, one bite at a time. And when we turn to face them, they cheer, and we pretend their gnawing hasn't made us weaker. Rats cannot even govern their own appetite. How can they govern themselves?
You sound like one of them.
I say so low it's almost a growl. Is a doctor wrong when he tells you what you don't want to hear? We don't have a monopoly on truth just because our aims are pretty, young man. If I were wrong, this planet would embrace us. Instead, it gnaws at us. If I were wrong, the Republic's fleet would already be here.
She looks to the sky.
Where is it, Dara? Where is our democracy? My hand drifts to the holodrop in my pocket. The small teardrop of metal holds the face of my wife. I ache to watch her messages again, to drink in her last words to me, her face, the lines that web around her eyes, to somehow evoke the warmth of her skin and breath.
But I fear to do so, all the same. 65 million kilometers of space separate Luna and Mercury at current orbit. An even wider gulf divides me from her. I do not doubt her, but I doubt she will do what must be done.
Orion hit the truth of it. She fears too much to see her father and brother in the mirror to dissolve the Senate. I know she thinks her virtue is contagious, but I fear it merely emboldens the covetous nature in mortals of weaker substance.
My wife promised that she would wrangle the senators. I say without conviction. That she would bring the armada.
Then why did you design Operations Voyager Cloak and Tartarus? Why not just wait for salvation?
I take my hand off the holodrop. Because hope is an opiate, not a plan.
Agreed. So how much longer can you hope, absent any evidence? That the people of the Republic are good, that they will finally start pulling their own weight.
When I do not answer, she stands, putting a hand on my shoulder in empathy. As Severo became softer, I found solace in Orion.
We have always been alike, particularly in our growing suspicions of democracy.
But it was always said in a grumble over a bottle of whiskey. Never in a screed like this. Her doubt troubles me, and I don't know how to ease it when the same doubts echo unspoken inside me. How long will it take to sink your blues? I ask.
About 90 minutes for full fidelity.
I'll handle Harnassus today. Her lips curl at his name. You know his opinions on Tartarus. Last thing I need is you two clawing each other's eyes out. You just sink up and get back to quarters. You need rest.
She walks away like a petulant child.
I stand.
Imperator, your commanding officer is speaking.
She stops and turns.
According to our Senate, you're not my commanding officer. You're a traitor.
There's only one thing to do with doubt. Stomp on it.
Imperator, I don't need your opinions. I don't care about your feelings. I don't care if you doubt the Republic. I don't care if you hate its people. For this army, this is an extinction event. My only care is that my best weapon is sharp before 0 hour. Will you be sharp, Imperator?
She snaps to attention.
As a rat's teeth, sir.